This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan, and we are coming to you late on a Sunday night after the Cubs have taken 2 of 3 from the San Francisco Giants at Wrigley Field, capping things off with a victory on ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball. So we will be taking a look at those 3 games with the Giants, breaking down our favorite players, quotes, trends from the series in the past week or so of Cubs baseball, and then we will preview the series with the Pittsburgh Pirates that, Brendan, as we're recording this, is rapidly approaching. I hope that the Cubs are on a plane or, you know, on their way to Pittsburgh and are able to grab a couple hours of sleep, because this is a quick turnaround with the
which is kind
start.
Of unfair. Like,
yeah,
that's ridiculous.
I believe that when I was listening to the radio on Saturday, Ron Coomer was saying that they did try to get things moved around a little bit, I think, for the game on Monday, given that they were playing the Sunday night game here tonight, but to no avail. So a quick turnaround. I think it's a 12:30 start in Pittsburgh tomorrow.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, that is a quick turnaround, especially with having to travel and then, you know, get to a hotel and stuff like that. So it's not like they can just pass out right now and, you know, wake up for the game. But
right.
Alas, they're Major League Baseball players. They'll have to find a way to get through it. So before I break down these 3 games real quick with the Giants, it is past midnight in Chicago, but when we are recording this, it is still May 27th in Los Angeles, where Brendan and I are recording this for you, and I would be remiss if I did not, on the air, wish a happy birthday to the legend, a living legend, Patrick Hughes, who had his birthday today. I saw that they did bring him some cake in the broadcaster's booth, which is just about the cutest thing you could imagine. I think I've talked enough about my love for Pat Hughes on this podcast, but I love Pat Hughes, and I wanted to wish him a happy birthday, Brendan.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Of course.
I don't know in your eyes, but, like, you know,
yeah, I don't,
the criteria.
To be honest with you, I've never really looked at how they, you know, what their criteria seems to be for that, but he's been doing it for quite some time.
Yeah.
And you would really have to think so.
I was listening to the score. It was funny, too, because he was actually interviewed on the score on a Sunday, on his birthday, at noon today. Like, if that's not dedication, I don't know what is, but he was talking about, you know, his life as a broadcaster. And I don't know who was interviewing him on the score, but they were talking about Len Casper as well. And so the reason I asked you about the Hall of Famer thing was because, like, they mentioned, like, if Len keeps doing this for the next 20 years, like, Len's a Hall of Famer, which is kind of crazy to think about. So, yeah, I think if Pat keeps doing this for 10 more years, like, you kind of have to put him in there.
Yeah, again, I don't know their criteria for stuff like this, but I think being, and, you know, this would go for Len as well, I think when you're the voice of the Chicago Cubs for decades at a time, I think that I would certainly think that would get you in the conversation. I'm not sure, you know, what more there is to
do. I think
do.
Pat's voice WRC plus is 190. If I had to rate it,
I'll take that. Yeah, seems a bit low on my end, but, you know, I'll take that. But yeah, so let's dig into these 3 games with the Giants first, and then we'll, you know, kind of get into things with a little more depth. The Cubs actually just tweeting now. It looks like, I mean, unless the Cubs delayed this tweet, it looks like they're just leaving the ballpark. They're all wearing their comfy blue onesies with their nicknames on the back. They're not the same as that first time that they did this. I don't remember if it was 2016 or 2015 that they did that, but they do look a little different. But I'm looking at a picture of Rizzo's, and his says just Tony on the back, which is great. I'd buy that right off his back.
I've seen string bean for CJ Edwards.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're not asleep yet is, I guess, the moral of that tweet. So they're going to be tired tomorrow. But as Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes said on the broadcast yesterday, that's what coffee was invented for. So let's get into these 3 games with the Giants. On Friday, the Cubs winning 6-2, a masterclass from Kyle Hendricks. 2 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts over 7 innings for Kyle Hendricks on only 88 pitches. So he really could have dialed that up even a little bit more. So a very efficient and quality outing for Kyle. The Cubs using a four-run seventh inning to give themselves a W in this one. Ben Zobrist, again, I think I've made this joke 1,000 times now, but stop me if you've heard this before. Ben Zobrist with a clutch hit. He doubles to give the Cubs a 3-1 lead, and they would not look back. Chris Bryant also driving in two with a single in that seventh inning, and Addison Russell giving the Cubs another insurance run, making it 6-1. They would win 6-2. On Saturday, the Cubs dropped this one 5-4. A short outing again for Jose Quintana, who only goes 4 1/3, allowing 5 hits and 4 earned runs with 2 walks and 6 strikeouts. The Cubs getting 2 homers in this one, one from Kyle Schwarber and one from Javier Baez, but it would not be enough. In this one, Brandon Crawford with a homer in this one off of Quintana, and Andrew McCutchen and Brandon Belt doing the damage in the 5th and 7th innings to pace the Giants' offense. Stratton picking up the win for the Giants. And then in tonight's game, the Cubs winning this one 8-3. This was a wacky one at Wrigley Field. I think we all figured it might be a little weird with Chatwood on the mound on Sunday Night Baseball.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, figured that that could get a little interesting with Tyler Chatwood's wild ride in absolute full effect tonight. But the Giants getting 3 runs in that top of the 1st inning. It was a real mess of an inning for basically everybody on the Cubs. Pablo Sandoval with a single, and Addison Russell doesn't get the ball out of his hand to Rizzo quick enough. I think maybe assuming that a couple more pounds were still on the panda over there as he was getting down the line, but he's not necessarily as slow as you might think he is or was. And then Mac Williamson singling to right and Jason Hayward airmailing the throw home, allowing that 2nd run to score, Longoria and Crawford scoring on that single to make it 3-0. And then the Cubs come up in the bottom of the 1st, and you really felt, Brendan, they needed to put runs on the board. If they went down 3-0, you know, a lifeless bottom of the 1st with Chatwood heading back out there, I think we all would have felt really poorly about how this game had started. But Chris Bryant doubling in Albert Almora to make it 3-1. Rizzo singling to bring in Bryant. This was a ball that was deflected off of the pitcher and, I believe, Pablo Sandoval, who was playing second base.
No, the umpire. It hit the umpire.
The umpire, yes, yeah. You're right. It deflects off of the pitcher and the umpire. And then as Sandoval was chasing it down, naturally Bryant is able to score from second.
MLB labeled that video Rizzo's pinballing RBI single.
That was exactly, yeah, that was a very good way to describe it. And then Addison Russell also deflecting one off of the pitcher that allowed Rizzo to score. So the Cubs, ultimately, it wasn't pretty, but they stitch together the 3 runs. They get themselves right back in the game, get Chatwood off the hook a little bit. It didn't really do anything for Tyler, but for the rest of the team, I think it kind of calmed everything down, like really avoided a little bit of a downward spiral in this game. And then Javi Baez homering, a 3-run homer in the 4th to give the Cubs a 6-3 lead. And then in the 5th, the Cubs get their insurance. Tommy La Stella with a single to drive in a run, and Albert Almora Jr. doubling to drive in La Stella. 8-3, your final in this one. Rosario picking up the win. We'll talk about him a little bit more. And then for those of you who are waiting for this in terms of Tyler Chatwood's line, some of you, if you have small children, you might want to cover their ears. This is not pretty. And I don't recommend any young baseball players watch Tyler Chatwood's outing tonight. But 2 2/3, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 5 walks, 3 strikeouts. So 5-3, your walk to strikeout ratio in this one for Tyler. Yeah, Brendan, I imagine that you'll be getting to Chatwood eventually here. I'm sure you were thrilled with this outing as one of Tyler's biggest supporters throughout the season. But
you're
gonna put thoughts
in people's mind here, Corey.
Yeah. People listen to the show. They know that they can pick up on the sarcasm. Mm-hmm. But I'll throw it to you, your player of the series, and we'll start there.
Yeah, my player of the series. Before I give that, this podcast is presented by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I had the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to, unfortunately, go to Dodger Stadium. I want to see Jake Arrieta play this Tuesday when the Phillies are in town. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners, you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code CUBSRELATED today. That's promo code CUBSRELATED for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So, the player of the series, it was a toss-up. I think you could have given the nod to several different people, but I keep saying this, I feel like, on a weekly basis now, but I am just extremely impressed with Almora's development here, Corey. So he goes 5-for-10 with two doubles, does not start the second game of the series, starts the first and third game of the series, and continues to play solid defense. And when we see Ian Happ, who has admittedly, and to his credit, been a lot better in center field this year, but when you see Ian Happ and Almora on back-to-back days, you just get a better appreciation for Almora's skill set, who he's one of the better outfielders in the league, we know that. So Almora, man, I'm loving what I'm seeing. He continues to put up better at-bats against righties, and his overall numbers just look impressive. I mean, you look up at the scoreboard, he's batting like, you know, close to 320 and just hitting baseballs all over the diamond. I think it's really encouraging to finally see the first-round talent that the Cubs went out and made him their first draft pick several years ago. It's fun to see.
Yeah, and I would encourage anybody, and it's weird, too, because I remember last year the defensive metrics weren't super high on Almora, and I remember we were all kind of trying to figure out exactly what that was about. But if you – ESPN had a good pulled-back camera on him for the ball that he ran down in the right center alley in tonight's game. And man, I mean, they can barely cut to that shot and he's already read it. He's already flying.
Well, that's the thing. It's those instincts, right?
Yeah. And I just thought that if you watch that pulled back clip from tonight's game, really good, I think, example of why he's able to make some of these plays and why he's so good out there. He just has really good instincts. He gets a really good first jump and takes good routes, which is, you know, a huge portion of what outfield defense and defense in general in the game of baseball is about.
Let's play a guessing game here, because you know I love to do this. What is Albert Almora's UZR per 150, which is basically your UZR, your ultimate zone rating per 150 chances. So it's kind of the all-encompassing defensive stat, not the best, but that's basically one of the most popular ones you use. What do you think it is, Corey? And 15 is Gold Glove caliber.
10.
Wow, you're really underselling Almora here. It's 19.4 so far. Phenomenal,
right?
I thought
you said 15. I didn't want to go higher. You know, it's like a Price is Right situation.
But 19.4. Last year was 1.7. And, you know, UZR takes a while to stabilize and all that nonsense. But overall, like, that matches what you're seeing, right? Like, we're seeing Almora on a night-out basis do this.
Yeah, I mean, you could put together, I think, pretty easily, like, a four-minute highlight reel.
Which you should at some point, by the way.
And it's 2 months. The Cubs did. The Cubs did a good one.
Well, you need to do
that weekend, he made like what four catches against the Rockies.
Well, he made like four in like one game.
Yeah. So it's been good to see. And you know, looking just quickly at his splits, you know, I think his BABIP is really high against righties. His BABIP right now is .418. So he's, you know, probably going to see some regression there. Mm-hmm. But as far as someone who's struggled against righties and, you know, those struggles have been apparent enough that he did not get those starts against righties, you know, he's putting up a .340 WOBA and a .115 weighted runs created plus right now. Again, remembering that 100 is league average. So whether or not he's getting lucky, like, who cares? You know, like, yeah, sure, it'll regress a little bit. But all we're looking for is, you know, against righties to get better and be serviceable against righties so you can get that glove out there and let him take these at-bats so he can get better. So high BABIP or not, like, you take it. Yeah. The results are good. And this at least, again, whether it's some luck or not, the numbers are good enough, you can keep running him out there, you know, and if it regresses, fine. Well, but as long as the results are there, you can do it. And then just to look at his numbers against lefties, you've got a .374 WOBA and a .137 weighted runs created plus. So I know that this is like somewhat of a meme almost amongst a lot of Cub fans at this point, but Brendan, I got to be honest with you. This guy should be playing every day. In my mind right now, and I know that, you know, you and I over the years have probably given 1,000 different answers on this. But I think right now, Albert Almora is your center fielder.
Dude, his K rate against lefties is 4%.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So, wow. I know that there's other guys who Joe wants to get in the lineup. There's other guys who need to develop as well. But I think Al's your center fielder right now, and I know I mentioned to you before we got on, but you don't like to look at a team's win-loss record necessarily with one player on the field because, you know, this isn't basketball, right? It's an individual sport to a degree in terms of the matchups, but the team wins when Almora's on the field. And Joe has tried him at leadoff, sometimes in the six hole when he's against a righty, etc. I don't right now care where it is. I just think he's got to be on the field.
Yeah, and a lot of the reasons the Cubs have won when he's on the field is because a good chunk of those games have come when he's up batting leadoff or up in the top five spots in the order. So, and when he was, you know, playing pretty well too and saving basically a run every other inning with those diving catches. So, like, yeah, like this is, I think this is kind of what Jeddin and Theo envisioned when they drafted him. So it's fun to see too. And I just wanted, like, that BABIP point you mentioned.
Sure.
I think BABIP, so like batting average and balls in play. So for those who aren't familiar with the stat, it's basically what it is. Your batting average and balls in play. And it's kind of relative whether or not what is high, what is low, based on your career norm, based on your batted ball portfolio. Like someone like a Chris Bryant, a .340 BABIP is normal. Someone like maybe Albert Pujols, a .280 BABIP is normal. So anything you go above, you go low, is kind of relevant and, relative to what you do on the field. So it can be a proxy of luck too. So you get some bloopers, you get some grounders, your BABIP is higher. For a more of the, even though the BABIP is high against righties, it's still such a small sample, and it's like when you hit the ball well, your BABIP's going to be high because you're getting base hits. Yeah. So right. It doesn't. I think it's a really common. I'm not saying you're doing this, but I see it all the time. It's a misuse of the stat when people automatically go and see, oh, he has a high BABIP. He's getting lucky. No, he's hitting the ball well, and that's a reflection of his adjustments. And yeah, maybe like over the next few weeks, it's really hard to hit the ball that well consistently. It might go down, but like, don't discount what he's doing. He's not getting like a blue piss. He's hitting the hell out of the ball. So
yeah, I just bring it up just because I, you know, I don't want it to come across as like, oh, he's fixed against righties, you know, or he's you know.
But I will say, like, I'm impressed by his at bats against righties.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. I think he's done everything you can ask for to deserve the opportunity to fail, let's put it that way, right? Like, if that's what happens, that's what happens. But I think right now, he's doing everything that he can to earn the right to be out there every day and to, you know, and it doesn't have to be literally every day, but in general, you know, and if it doesn't pan out that way, okay. But I think for now, I'm not really sure. I don't like the idea of him being in and out of the lineup.
Well, it's fun.
At this point, he's got to be in the lineup most of the time.
It's fun, too. And it's going to be a kind of a difficult thing. Actually, maybe not that difficult when we get into it. But seeing Hap play well recently, too, as the last few weeks, Schwarber hit a bullet of a homer in that second game of the series. Mm-hmm. He looks great this year. His WRC plus is around almost like 150. So those three guys are developing. On the other side of the spectrum, which
I couldn't guess, Brendan, where you're going with this.
On the other side of the spectrum, we have
Brendan's getting into his trend of the series.
Yeah, we're just gonna go for it now. Yeah. You can give your player of the series after this, but. All right. I'm getting nauseous, dude, watching Hayward hit. Like, I don't know where we go with this, guys. It's a huge issue. We have Schwarber, Hap, Zobrist, Amora all playing well within their projections, their expectations, some of which exceeding those expectations. And you listen to scouts talk about Hayward, you watch what he's done this year. And I know the defense is his you know, saving grace. He's making errors. He's not looking as sharp at some point. Like, at some point, I don't know what we're going to do with him. And you have to think, like, a defensive replacement at this point is kind of like the best case scenario given what this Cubs team is made up of right now.
Yeah.
It's not fun. I mean, I hate saying this because, like, we rooted for Hayward and we're, you know, the past 2 years we're saying, you know, great teammate. He's working his butt off. It just sucks to see, but this is the reality of the situation.
I think you and I have given it a real fair shake here. I don't think we've been unfair to Jason or the process. But I'll tell you, Brendan, there was a reason that in the last podcast we recorded, I said Hayward getting that at bat against Andrew Miller worried me. And what I meant by that was what we saw today. And I know some of the beat writers said that Ian Happ, when he dove for that ball, he got banged up a little bit. He's fine. We have some other injury news and roster updates we'll get to in a minute here. But so he wasn't able to go tonight. There's other players on this team. And the reason that I said that I was worried about him taking that at bat is because Jason Hayward, who has a 5 WRC plus against left-handers.
That's not a mistake. It's actually a 5.
5. Single digit.
0-5.
5. he gets a start tonight against a lefty. That is his WRC plus against lefties in the 2018 season. And he gets a start tonight against a ground ball inducing left-handed pitcher who not only doesn't have reverse splits, because I checked, I wanted to make sure when I saw him starting against a lefty, like, okay, maybe there's something I'm missing here. Not only does Ty Blotch,
who cares,
I don't know, some guy on the Giants who started tonight,
Black,
not only does he not have reverse splits, but he has, at least this year especially, fairly dramatic normal splits where he is dominant against left-handers and not so good against right-handers. So the reason I was worried is in what, like, just what, Brendan, what is Jason Hayward doing out there?
Well, I don't know. Maybe
against a lefty.
I hate it. Don't get me wrong, but like you have the early game on Monday, so you want to rest Zobrist and Hap
against a righty.
It's fine, but
Hayward should have played tomorrow. Look, I know. It's
that's fair. That's fair. But you know how Joe is though with this whole, like, you don't get a mental day off if you don't tell him the day before, or whatever.
To get back to your point. We are reaching. We knew we would get to this point. I think we all knew that this was going to happen at some point.
We're here, guys. This is it. This is it.
Hayward is, I think, objectively impeding the development of other players. And I'm not really positive, like, what they're supposed to do about that. You know, I don't have the biggest problem with him starting against righties. I prefer it not be all the time because you're generally going to face a lot more righties than you are lefties. But, you know, he puts up serviceable numbers with those. I'm not really sure what the deal with him in the field is this year. It it's just sort of like everything else with this team is just like not as tight as it should be. But I, you know, he's a great fielder. I don't really worry about that. But yeah, you get to a point where on a daily basis, you got to figure out how to get some of these guys in the lineup, and you just run out of spaces. There are certain constants in this lineup that are going to be in there every day or mostly every day. And, you know, we shouldn't be debating whether Almora's out there for most of these games. You know, he should just be out there, you know, but it's because you've got other guys, you're trying to balance everything and figure out when everybody should be playing, that I think we're even having that conversation at this point. So, yeah, I'm not thrilled with it. I think we've passed the, you know, we're through the looking glass or whatever cliched expression you want to break out for that one, but it's been 2.5 years now of this. He's not going to get better.
I mean, guys, he has over 1,000 plate appearances. Like, yeah, I'm still.
We've been on that train as much as anybody, but I'm off it now. I jumped off. You know, maybe a couple weeks ago.
And I'm
still not going to get better.
Yeah, it's not. And I'm still floored when people respond too. And it's a minority, but like, oh well, you know, he went 1 for 3. He's hitting the ball hard. But like, at some point,
congrats.
Like, it's I'm going
to
lose my mind.
I say this to you, Brendan, all the time. It reminds me of the last portion of Castro's career with the Cubs, where I literally remember people were applauding him for hustling, like running out ground balls that he was making into outs. Like, that's where we are with Hayward, where it's like, well, he got a hit tonight. Congrats. Everybody else on the team does that all the time. You know, like, we don't pat Anthony Rizzo on the back when he gets one hit, for Christ's sake, you know, like a bleeder through the infield. I mean, we just don't, because that's not the threshold for anybody.
Right.
And, you know, and again, I don't really know what the deal is with it, but like, he doesn't hit well enough to miss the cutoff man tonight. He just doesn't. He has to be perfect
in
the field. And I know that's a terrible standard to hold somebody to, but if he's not going to hit, he has to be perfect in the field. A Gold Glove winner, top of the league right fielder, no questions asked, or he can never see the field.
You and I are on the same page here. It's unfortunate. Again, like, I really do lose sleep over this contract, and hopefully Darvish doesn't follow suit with this injury. We'll get into that in a little bit. But let's give your player of the series before.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Hayward all night. I'm sure nobody. Look, if you are thrilled when you see Hayward in the lineup, I got to be honest with you. You are in an extreme minority here. So I imagine that everybody's just kind of with us on being kind of tired of that. But my player of the series is Kyle Hendricks. Mm. Kyle Hendricks was fantastic.
I love it.
What'd you say?
I said I love it. It's just,
yes, me too.
Yeah,
So he improves to 4-3, and this was just, you know, this was Kyle Hendricks at his best. Again, 88 pitches. He comes out. You know, the Cubs have the lead and turn it over to, you know, a very strong portion of their bullpen. 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. You know, I'm not really sure what more you want from the guy, but he lowers his season ERA to 3.16. You know, and I think I know that, you know, especially with guys on offense, they're obviously playing every day, so sometimes it feels a little weird to pick a starter as the player of the series. But similar to what we talked about with John Lester, in, you know, now you have Darvish. I think this will be a good transition to the Darvish thing when we finish up on Hendricks. But yeah. You've got the Darvish situation here, you know, where he's on the 10-day DL now. We'll see what happens after that. Jose Quintana, another disappointing outing on Saturday. Tyler Chatwood is an unmitigated disaster. I don't know literally any other way to describe that.
Walk per nine is 8.5.
Yeah, that's not going to, that dog is not going to hunt, Brendan. That's not going to play. But it's really, really good to see Hendricks and Lester pitching like this. We have seen, in addition to the aforementioned Jake Arrieta, we have seen these two pitchers carry this team literally to a championship. And I think it's fair to be, you know, really pumped about the way that they're pitching. And, you know, this was just, you know, this was just classic Hendricks, just watching him do his thing, changing speeds, changing velos. I feel like we mentioned this a lot recently, but the pitching ninja on Twitter, Rob Friedman, is one of if not the best follow for baseball. But he's been doing this thing recently where he's been overlaying two pitchers or two pitches from the same pitcher to demonstrate the repeatability of mechanics, tunnels, and kind of the difficulty of hitting some of these guys. And he did one with, I believe it was Hendricks' fastball, and it might have been a breaking ball, but maybe it was the changeup. Regardless,
I think he did both.
He might have done both. The point of it was, you watch Hendricks, and his mechanics are identical, exactly the same, no matter what pitch he's throwing. The ball comes out of the hand the same exact way, and at that last possible second, the fastball keeps going, the changeup fades away. Yeah. But you're watching it, it's the same thing until that absolute last second, right when the hitter has to make a decision on what he's swinging at. It's dipping and going the other way. And it was just a really good example of why Hendricks is so hard to hit. And it's something you hear about all the time from people that don't watch him every day. How does he do this when he only throws 88? How is it possible that he gets through these lineups and gets through the playoffs and World Series and dices these guys up time after time after time? They watch as much video on him. They've got scouting reports, you know, years of it now. Doesn't matter. He still gets in there. He outsmarts them. He uses the velos. He changes the eye level. It's just fantastic. And I've said this before, but he's not my favorite player. That's John Lester. But Kyle Hendricks' pitching is
refreshing. I always think of that word.
It's baseball. I think from a studious perspective, at its best, because there is just so much going on there. It's not Aroldis Chapman or some of these other guys just pumping gas and daring hitters to do it. Every pitch that Hendrick throws is mindful and thought out, and it, you know, one is setting up the other. Nothing is a waste pitch with Kyle Hendrick.
He's got two changeups, cutting changeup, tailing changeup. Right. Every single, I guess the best word to describe it too is like he throws with intent. Like every pitch has a particular purpose, you know?
Yep. And, you know, it's something that the pitching ninja has been trying to demonstrate lately, and he's been using these overlays to do it, where, you know, you might look at a pitch in the dirt and think, oh, that's a garbage pitch, it's a waste pitch, but it's not. Then you see the next one, right, and it's at the eye level, or it's a high fastball that the guy swings through, or it's that same breaking ball, but just a tick in the zone, and you're able to kind of piece together the thought process, like, ah, you know, that wasn't a waste pitch. That was to get him to swing at this pitch that, you know, gets a strikeout. So
yeah.
I just think that stuff is really always on display with Kyle Hendricks. And again, in a year that has been wrought with inconsistency and instability in basically every level except most of the bullpen for this Cubs team, Lester and Hendricks doing what they're doing, you know, both of them, I think Lester's already under 3 for his ERA on the year, but Hendricks is getting there.
3.16
3.16. Kyle Hendricks is at the, Stone Cold Steve Austin 3.16 ERA. Evan would be disappointed if I didn't work that in there. I would have been disappointed in myself. But, it's big for this team to be able to, hopefully, you know, and you see how the season plays out.
Wait, did you just drop a wrestling thing on this podcast? Is that what that was?
Yes, Austin 3.16.
You get one of those every 3 months.
You go look it up, all right? But, you know, I think to be able to look at those guys and at least for now be able to say, okay, we know what we're getting out of these guys and it's good, so let's go from there, right? Which, Brendan, I'm becoming quite the radio professional, as you can tell.
You're learning from me.
Yeah. Does it count as a great transition if you mention that it's a good transition?
Well, probably not. They're so good that you have to bring it up. You got to give yourself credit at some point.
Yeah. So let's transition. I'll throw it to you and I'll let you do it in whatever order that you like. But let's dig into these other 3 in this rotation, and we'll call this my trend of the series. I have another thing I'd like to mention, but we'll do that in a bit. So the trend of the series, I think, has to be you get a horrific outing from Tyler Chatwood on national television tonight. You get a partially good outing from Quintana that goes off the rails. I got sort of a Jekyll and Hyde bunch of messages from you, like, dude, Q looks really good, and then like an hour later, dude, Q looks terrible.
Which was accurate in my mind.
Yeah, and so then the update on Yu Darvish goes on the 10-day DL retroactive to May 23rd with right triceps tendonitis. He will have an MRI on Tuesday. And we're already, you know, getting quotes from Madden where, you know, he's saying, I talked to you, and he said this is a direct quote, doesn't sound awful. So I throw it to you, Brendan, because I think that phrase is a really good way to explain the other three members of this rotation. It doesn't sound awful. What's going on? Take your pick with any of these three, you know, lovely candidates.
Let's just end off on Darvish. So I'll start with, I'm going to go fast here. Quintana is just kind of weird, man. I can't figure it out. He's looked better recently. Mm-hmm. The velocity looks good. The curveball looks sharp, but he just loses his command at times. And I think that last start against the Giants is a perfect example. He comes out, and he is just, the first inning, he's just making guys whiff on that fastball left and right, showing a curve, pinpointing everything. The fourth and fifth inning, he loses it. Like, I was tweeting with Matt Clapp, and, like the overall stats, they look good, but when you just, like, look at the last inning or two, he didn't hit Willie one time where he was setting up. I go back and watch that those last two innings. Willie's setting up down and in. He's going up, and he got smacked because of it. So I don't like seeing that. And for someone with Q, who has relied on the curveball, the fastball his entire career, he's a two-pitch guy, doesn't get that many whiffs, which is fine if you get the weak contact. He's like a Kyle Hendricks to a degree when it comes to that type of stuff. But there's no margin for error. If you don't locate, you don't command, the lack of whiffs is going to come back and bite you in the butt. So overall, I think recently it's been encouraging for Q. I think he's close to getting back to that point in his career numbers where everything looks normal. It's irritating just because you have someone like Chatwood who's been a complete and utter disaster. Honestly, Corey, maybe he needs to, this maybe this is a hot take or whatever, but maybe he does need to just, you know, take a step back and maybe go to the bullpen for like a week or two just to get things straightened up. I don't know how you can keep it running now, a guy with an 8.5 walk per nine on a day in, day out basis.
Right.
So not liking what I see there. And then for Darvish, whenever guys get MRIs, it scares the hell out of me. And you never know what's going on until you actually go in and see the actual image and see some of the potential damage, whatever you're looking for, you just don't know. So it's a little unsettling hearing tricep soreness, especially because that was the same description that preceded Tommy John for him in, I think it was 2014, 2015. So I can't say I'm going to be sleeping well the next two nights. I think the Tuesday I'll be refreshing Twitter nonstop. I don't care that the description says not sounding awful. I just don't care about that. So unfortunately, that's where we are, where we have Lester, we have Hendricks, who are just consistent, you get a better appreciation for them. Q is close in my mind. I was a little worried. I was more worried about him a few weeks ago, but he's looking better recently. But yeah, Corey, this Chatwood Darvish thing, Chatwood is whatever, but Darvish's health scares me. And I think Darvish will be fine if he's healthy. It's a little unsettling.
Yeah, so Quintana, very interesting, because this is sort of something that we've seen from him where the train just sort of derails from the track.
I mean, it was off. Two innings, goodbye.
When he was just so good at the beginning of this game, you know, he starts the game yesterday with a double, then gets McCutchen to ground out, Longoria to ground out, Belt strikes out. The second the Giants lead off with a single, then he strikes out the next three batters, Crawford, Hundley, and Tomlinson. In the third, he starts that inning with two strikeouts, walks McCutchen, gets Longoria to fly out. So at that point, you're thinking, dude, he's rolling along. He's getting a ton of whiffs, some soft contact. This is great. And then the fourth, a line out from Belt, a walk, a Crawford homer. Then he gets out of the inning and, you know, obviously doesn't get past the fifth. Fifth starts with a line out and then back-to-back doubles, and he's out of there. And, mm-hmm. you know, as you said, the command just goes. I don't know.
It's a third time through, too. Yeah, so I don't know if it's a fatigue thing or just still trying to get comfortable, whatever.
It's a common thing, I think, that we see from him in some of these starts, and certainly something that has drawn the ire of a lot of people that I follow on Twitter and stuff, and just people that I read their baseball opinions. He just seems to he nibbles a little bit, and it gets him in trouble. And, you know, you just like to see him attacking a little bit more and trusting his stuff. And it just seems to sort of come off the rails when he tries to avoid contact a little too much and pitch to those edges. And, you know, sometimes when you're not getting the calls or sometimes when you just don't have that pinpoint command to do that, it'll get you in trouble. And you kind of have to adjust when that's not really working. I think he'll be fine, and I think that, you know, with Hickey, they'll figure out exactly what to do. But you really just this whole, you know, less than five inning start and giving up runs and just how often some of these guys have their starts seemingly just like totally go off the rails is getting frustrating. And, you know, it's really taxing the bullpen, and it should be interesting to see what happens tomorrow with Montgomery starting.
Well, it's just
because the bullpen has pitched so much, you know, but I...
Yeah, Stejak.
I don't really worry about Quintana, because I look at... You
but
know,
isn't,
how
it, hold on, isn't it weird, though? Like, I'm sorry to jump in there, but...
Sure.
2015, Corey, his walk per nine is 1.92. Like, his walk per nine is always... Every single year, under like around or if not under 2.5. Last year was around 3. This year is almost 5. So it's been 10 starts. I know his career numbers speak volume, but it's just a little bit of a dip in command. This is kind of what happens. And there's that new command stat. Have you seen that by Enos Aris? You're the one who sent it to me, right? It's okay. So if we graph command over the last 3 years, it's been a steady decline for Quintana. So I don't know what you want to make of that. I know he's had different pitching coaches, especially coming over from Bosio to Hickey to why am I forgetting the White Sox pitching coach's name? The dude's
Don Cooper.
There he is. He's been around forever. So he's had three coaches in the last basically, you know, 10 months. So maybe you can empathize with that or whatever, but. That's a big concern for me. This always will be a concern for me, and I think whenever you have a guy again who just lives off of command, it's like the equivalent of Kyle Hendricks losing his command. You would be shocked if that happened, right, Corey? So
right.
this is just something that really irritates me. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, you just like to see better results. And, you know, Quintana, and, you know, I suppose this is true with most pitchers, but Quintana's just one where you see him have those great starts. You think back to that one in September of last year against the Brewers, and, you know, we've seen a couple this
year.
Even
the Cincinnati start a week and a half ago.
Good.
Yeah.
And why it isn't there every game, I'm not really sure. But I think, yeah, I mean, for him, it's a command thing, and I'm not sure if he's doing something differently. I don't think that he is, you know, so I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what, but I think he'll figure it out. I hope he figures it out because, you know, we do need him to be a top of the rotation guy. As far as Chatwood is concerned, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, does anybody know? I mean, look, at a certain point, he walked the pitcher twice tonight, and this is not the first, it's not the second, I don't even think it's the third start he's had where he's walked his counterpart. If you told me he did it every time, I'd take that probably over the field. If you gave me a choice, do you think he's walked the pitcher every time he's pitched or some other outcome? I think I'd take the former. I'd be like, I don't know, probably.
By the way, you know, Corey, remember when I asked you, did you see Theo? Did ESPN cut to Theo? They did.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you...
Okay.
So that's why I knew they would. So they cut to Theo after that second inning when Schwarber caught that line out.
Uh-huh.
Theo's words, you can read his lips. First off, Jed just gets up after the out. Huge sigh of relief, walks away.
Yeah.
Theo goes, wow, what an inning, and starts like laughing. You know what he's thinking too, because he's just like, you know, he's just, I think that was in and he walked the pitcher, right? So I think Theo speaks for all of us there.
Yeah, but look, we all broke down why they signed this guy. He's got really good stuff. And, you know, before you write that off, remember that that's why they got Jake Arrieta. That's literally exactly the line of thinking when they brought in Jake Arrieta. And I remember reading all those quotes from guys like A.J. Ellis, people in the Orioles organization. Like, this guy's got insane stuff. I don't know why he's not better, right? And I'm not – I don't say that to mean that Tyler Chatwood is Jake Arrieta or even that the stuff is as good. But when you hear people say that, and it's not just people on the Cubs, like – there's a reason that you pay money for that and think, okay, well, let's see what we can get out of
this. And it's a good deal, too. You know, $39 million is the equivalent of, like, 24 or five years ago.
3 years, yeah. It's not a big deal. Yeah. But so, you know, and especially in this age where we can look at the spin rates and all this different data on this stuff, like, he's got really good stuff. And you see it in some of these games, and it's the reason he's able to have a 4-1 ERA leaving this game tonight, even though he walks literally half the world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty positive he's the writer and singer. You know that song, like, I would walk 500 miles? I'm pretty sure that's about Tyler Chatwood, like, or he wrote that song.
Can you get
song.
The music video of that and just, like, overlay Chatwood's face on the singer?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, man. I mean, and, you know, I got to give Twitter credit. There was some really funny stuff out there. I saw somebody was tweeting about a joke that someone had made, like, who's going to walk Meghan Markle down the aisle? And somebody said, Tyler Chatwood. We laugh because it hurts, you know?
And we laugh because we won tonight, or we would not be laughing.
But, look, I think in a real sense, right, and I would imagine that this has got to be at least partially the thinking from most people in the front office. You can't start a guy that walks as many people. We've continued to say this every week, like, eventually this is going to bite him. This is not sustainable. There's a reason that, you know, we keep repeating those same lines. It's not because we like saying them. It's because it's true. Nobody, you know, think of how many pitchers you can name that have a great deal of success constantly walking more people than they're striking out.
Zero.
And walking so many people. I mean, he walked five guys in 2 2/3, including the pitcher twice, Brendan, which... And I was telling you this before, as Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation pointed out, is pretty indicative that maybe it's not mechanical and there's some sort of mental thing going on. And I, you know, again, I don't know how you quantify that and whether it's something similar to, like, Justin Wilson, who, you know, has the, you know, absolute yips at times, or if it's a different breed of that. But when you cannot, in those scenarios, it is literally you need to throw a strike to avoid walking the pitcher. No matter where you throw it, odds are he's not going to hit it. And if he does, not going to hit it well. And he can't do it twice. That's not good. That is reflective of something that is wrong. And maybe it is mechanics. We'll see. You know, we can look at, like, the release point data and stuff like that. If he's just he's got kind of a bit of a wild, you know, movement filled delivery. But if you cannot do that, you're not going to have success as a pitcher in this league. And so to get to the original question that you posed, what do they do about it? I don't know. I think you're rapidly approaching, if you're not already there, the point where you cannot allow him more starts.
I think you're already there. I said it last time we recorded, but Jim Hickey was on the Score, and he said, quote, it's unacceptable. And he didn't say it in a demeaning tone, but when you see your president laughing on national television because you just walked the pitcher and you're walking five guys, and you have your pitching coach say stuff, like, you know, it's a thought there, right? Like, okay, maybe something has to be done here. And
well, and it is killing this bullpen.
And look, and Steve Cishek is on pace for, like, 85, 90 outings. Come on.
And I mean, so, you know, just looking at it, Tyler Chatwood has 10 starts, 48 innings pitched. That is not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look, with someone like Quintana, you look at when he gets taken out on Saturday, and I think you could have debated it, but with him, you take it, right? Because in general, even if he's not where he has, you know, was with the White Sox or what he did for the Cubs last year, like, you know, he's going to be pretty good throughout the year. He's going to be a serviceable starter at worst, a middle of the rotation guy if he's not able to dial in that command. You know, so there's going to be starts where, like on Saturday, you could let him push through it. He had only thrown like 70 pitches, I think. You could let him push through it. He probably gets through it. Maybe he gives up another run or two, but it's whatever. You take him out because you're like, eh, I'm not feeling it. Let's try to lock this down. We'll bring somebody in. With Chad, with this, so what I'm saying is, with someone like Quintana, you take those. They're going to happen, right? They're going to happen to everybody. You know, we saw last year Lester had a couple starts where he gave up, what, 10 runs by the time the first inning was over? Like, it happens, right? It happens to everybody. But with Chad, this is every single game. He is out before the fifth inning, and he's killing the bullpen. He's killing the bullpen. Wilson Contreras is going to need, like, a physical therapist by the end of the year, by how often. I mean, he must have jumped out of his crouch 5 times to try to catch a fastball that was going to go to the net or something like that. It's just not good for anybody,
he was pissed now.
And, you know, it is worth pointing out, like, not to excuse Russell not getting that ball out quick enough in the first inning tonight, or Hayward not hitting the cutoff man, or not hitting, you know, not getting that throw to the plate, whatever. It's not good for these defenders to be out there for 40 pitches at a time every time this guy's on the mound. Again, I'm not excusing the lackadaisical play, but it's a lot easier to have mental lapses in the field when these innings take literally 20 minutes, you know, and it's an hour between these at-bats and these pitches, and it's just constant turnover. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for Chadwood. It's not good for the defense. It's not good for the offense that starts half these games knowing they need to score several runs because their pitcher is literally walking everybody and their brothers. So I think we'll see what Montgomery does tomorrow. You've got guys, you know, like your top prospect in Alzolay, doing good things, and, you know, everybody speaking very highly of. You've got someone like Dwayne Underwood who's pitching very well, and, you know, we'll see what Montgomery does tomorrow. Montgomery, I don't think has lit the world on fire when he's gotten these starting opportunities, but he certainly hasn't been this bad like Chadwood has been. He's certainly not walking as many people, and yeah, I feel like you think that Montgomery can give you a chance to win the game. And I think right now it's really tough to think that with Chadwood, because even when he's good, odds are he's thrown 80, 90 pitches by the third or fourth inning. So I don't know. I know I'm going to read a quote here. I'm going to do my quote of the series here that came through the wire here not too long ago from Patrick Mooney on Tyler Chadwood. But yeah, I think you're rapidly approaching decision time. I think that if this was 2016 or something, where the team is winning every game and, you know, they're already kind of like looking in the rearview mirror at everybody else in the division, I think you can maybe try to let him work through it a little more and see what happens, because you believe in the stuff and you are hoping that that's what translates eventually. But with the way that this team has been inconsistent overall, I just don't really know how much longer you can afford this. But here's what Joe Maddon said on Tyler Chadwood after tonight's game. Quote, "We have work to do." "He has work to do. I'm not saying by any means giving up on him. I really believe in this fellow. The stuff is that good. We just got to get a more stable routine that permits him to control
himself." There's that word, Corey, permit. We should have a bell for this.
"When he gets out there. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what that means."
I hope Monty comes out tomorrow and just rips it up. I would love that. I think we said it. Yeah. You said it too here. Like, Monty's numbers are not the greatest this year. He had that one bad outing last time out. Mm-hmm. I think, like, ironically, it was after mopping up Chatwood, right? I'm forgetting now because all these bad starts are meshing together.
It was.
Okay, it was. So, like, you know, that was not a good outing or whatever. But overall, he hasn't been in a consistent routine either. And he's been stretched. Right. He's been going long relief. So,
well, and we know going into the year, he was nonplussed by the role.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if that affects his performance, but it could.
Yeah. And, but you know what he has? He has he's a low to mid-90s fastball and a good hook and a good changeup. And I always remember this too. It's always in the back of my head. And all the data supports it. But Enos Arias, about a year and a half ago, looked at the best secondary pitches in Major League Baseball, not just for starters and relievers, overall. And one of the best pitches in Major League Baseball is not even Montgomery's curveball. It's his changeup. There's only a handful of pitchers in the league that had two top 25 rated secondary pitches by movement, by all of that stuff, by whatever Eno operationalized all that. Montgomery was in the top. It was right there, top 25. Not many guys have that. So the stuff is really, really raw for Montgomery, just as much as it is for Chatwood. So I would love to see, I've always said this, I would love to see Monty get more of a chance. He's unfortunately kind of been pushed around a little bit just because there's been other really interesting guys as well. But Corey, I'm going to say it. I'm at the point where I want to see Monty get the shot. I got to see Chatwood kind of step down, maybe go in a long relief, get it together. I'm not giving up on Chatwood either, but I'm a little bit more pro-Monty here.
Yeah, so in 69 and a third innings as a starter in 2017, Mike puts up a 4.15 ERA, a 2.22 batting average against, a 2.80 WOBA against. Literally, as I was reading this stats, Brendan, one of those like spam ads popped up from FanGraphs. So thanks for that.
Which is above league average now, Corey. The average, I think, the average ERA or FIP last year for just pitchers was like 4.4 with this whole juice ball, whatever. So that's for a fifth starter. Like, well, that's what you want.
And a 7.27 K per nine, a 2.73 walks per nine.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd take that
absolutely.
Now. And again, like, it really is something where it's not even so much, it's about Chatwood, but it's about the team right now. Like, the team just cannot continue to afford those starts. I mean, the last two outings from Tyler Chatwood, literally the last two outings against the Giants and the Indians, 2 2/3, both times, a total of 11 walks and 4 strikeouts in those outings. It can't go on much longer. I mean, again, it's not so much about Chatwood, because you'd love for him to turn it around and, again, be able to tap into that stuff that everybody is talking about and that we have seen. But it's almost June, and this team is not firing on all cylinders. They cannot afford a two-inning start every fifth day and the bullpen having to come in and mop everything up. And, you know, I don't know that Chatwood would continue to do that, but you run out of time to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I want to give my quote of the series two with Chris Giménez, who is now up. Victor Caratini sent down to AAA. Giménez had to have a decision made or he would have opted out of his contract. So Giménez said, and this is actually in regards to Adbert Alzolze. I could never say his name. I probably never will be able to, but I'm going to try. He said, quote, "He's ready to kind of explode. He's chomping at the bit to get up here. If it wasn't for a little bit of rain, you probably would have seen him. I would expect it to be fairly soon because he's a special kid." So that's good words from a veteran catcher. And Alzolay's numbers aren't the best at AAA right now. His ERA is 5.3. His FIP is 5.06. His K per 9 is only 6.06. His walk per 9 is 3.28. He's 23 years old. He has electric stuff. It's always been what scouts have raved about with them. So the numbers, sometimes you don't want to get too entrenched with them. But at the same time, not only is Alzolay pitching well, I think I said his name pretty well there. Not only is he pitching well,
he did.
I know, I should give myself kudos. Dwayne Underwood Jr., whom was my favorite pitcher in his system about 3 years ago, finally coming around, having a great year at AAA. He has a 3.35 ERA, 3.50 FIP. His K per 9 is 7.7. Walk per 9 is under 2 at 1.97. So there's options in AAA, and you can even look at Alec Mills, who has an ERA around 4 as well. So there's guys who could fill voids, even if Monty doesn't pitch well, or if they want to keep him in that swing role or in that fireman role if the bullpen gets tired. So
if Steve Cishek's arm falls
which
off.
It might at this point. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how he's going out there every other day. It's crazy.
Knew I'd like that guy when they signed
yeah, him. Well,
he was ready for this.
I don't think he thought he would be used this much.
Probably not.
But here's my takeaway. So just to wrap up before we preview the series against Pittsburgh here, but my takeaway is I believe in this stuff. And the spin rate, the curveball, everything is there. It's just disappointing. And I think it's fine to be disappointed. Yeah. And I think echoing what Madden's saying and Hickey's saying and Theo and everything, like, they know what's going on here. We're always a step behind of everything. So I really do trust their decisions when it comes to the rotation and pitching. They have a good track record of keeping their guys healthy, moving the guys around. I don't really have any concern about that. But again, if I'm being honest here, I would just like to see Monty get more of a chance. So I'm going to preview the series against Pittsburgh.
You'd really like Monty to do well tomorrow and at least get that conversation stirring in everybody's
mind. Just a little bit.
Because, you know, obviously if Monty puts up a clunker, then it, you know, kind of makes things a little more confusing.
Right.
Before you preview the series, I do want to mention my bonus player of the series today was Ranny Rosario.
Oh, yeah, he's been phenomenal.
I believe was called back up maybe when Darvish was on the DL. I lose sight of some of these because they also send Caratini down. Chris Jimenez is up, and I assume he's catching tomorrow because Wilson hopefully is getting some time off, not only because he caught a night game, but he caught a Tyler Chatwood night game. So I think Wilson Contreras probably earned himself a day off for that one.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a key spot for Ranny Rosario. He comes in after Chatwood and delivers 2 1/3, 1 hit, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. And this is just a big spot. This is a younger guy.
Throwing mid to upper 90s.
Yeah, and who just has, you know, has obviously not been with the big league team on a consistent basis, but they needed this tonight. They needed somebody to get them, you know, 2 big innings also from Brian Dunsing, who still continues to dazzle. I believe he's still only given up 1 run on the entire season. So he's like a bonus player of the series B, Rosario A. But this was a big outing for them to allow the Cubs offense to come back in this one and to, you know, get those insurance runs and just settle everything down. You know, it was just such a disaster of a start. You don't want to lose 2 or 3 to the Giants at home. And they needed somebody to come in there and eat those innings and step up and keep the team in the game. And Rosario did that. And that's difficult for a young guy. And again, someone who is not on this team every day. You know, this is somebody coming into a high-pressure situation and you know, one that they often have to, you know, as we saw with Justin Grimm in years past, you know, they often have to kind of be the sacrificial lamb here a little bit, you know, because sometimes these are the guys who, you know, if they need an extra arm tomorrow, Rosario might be the one that gets sent back down. He's up, he's down, he's up, he's down. He's like the, you know, the extra man on a doubleheader, then he's back down. So I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that because it was very important that those guys were able to shut the Giants down, calm everything down as far as the pitching was concerned, and allow this offense to take over, do their thing, and, you know, the Cubs end up winning the series. One last thing before you preview this series, and if you saw it, because I tweeted it, you don't have to feign ignorance. You can just tell me. But with his homer tonight, 3-run homer tonight, do you already know it?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, you were laughing.
I'm laughing because, I didn't know where you were going with that, but go ahead.
Oh, all right. It's always concerning to me when Brendan starts laughing. He is kind of like a maniacal. You never know what's going on in that kid's brain. So,
so I don't even know where to go with that one.
With his 3-run homer tonight, Javi Baez gets to 42 RBIs on the season. He is the first Cub since another Cub to reach the 40 RBI plateau before Memorial Day. I don't know if you saw the stat. They shared it on ESPN as well. But are you aware of who that?
Of course.
When the last time this happened for the Cubs?
I'm gonna one up you. Okay. I'm gonna one up you. Who did the Cubs trade to get that player?
Oh man.
Yeah. Because there's a backstory to this. That's why I bring it up. Like a recent backstory.
I don't think I remember that, to be perfectly honest.
He stopped Choi.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So
right. I shouldn't.
So this is, has this ever happened to you? So I'm at the game on Friday.
To clarify, the answer to the question is Derek Lee, not that. Hee-Sop Choi. Hee-Sop Choi was traded for Derek Lee. The way you said that, I didn't want people to be confused. Like,
yeah.
The last. So to clarify the trivia question that ESPN shared tonight, Javi is the first Cub since Derek Lee in that magical 2005 season to have 40 RBIs or more. Javi has more. Yeah. Prior to Memorial Day.
Yeah. So I have a backstory to that, cool. why I brought up Hee-Sop Choi. But so I'm at the game on Friday, and tell me if this has ever happened to you. So the same beer vendor is, you know, I'm buying beers from most of the game. The seventh inning comes along, and I buy like the last round. He gives me like 10 baseball cards. And he gave me a Hee-Sop Choi rookie card. Is that a new thing at Wrigley? Do like beer vendors baseball cards?
I think sometimes the beer vendors are unique. Sometimes
I just bought too many. That was like a token of gratitude or whatever it was.
They have their own thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But also just because I'm looking at it and it's fun to reminisce on. Derek Lee in 2005, a .335 batting average, a .418 on base percentage, .662 slugging percentage, which was good for a .1080 OPS. On the whole year, 46 home runs, 107 RBIs. Yeah. I don't know without looking at it who finished ahead of him, but he finished third in MVP voting.
What year was that? 2005, right?
2005. So it looks like Pujols wins it and Andrew Jones is ahead of him. Just saying, Derek Lee had a better OPS than both of them, but
he's a better defender.
Andrew Jones did hit 51 home runs that year. Pujols had more RBIs. I guess you're splitting hairs there, but if I'm looking at this from an extremely biased lens and looking at literally three numbers for each, I would have given it to Derek Lee. But I just wanted to read that trivia question. I also love when Javi hits opposite field home runs.
Did you see the hop he had?
Always fun.
The Sammy hop. It was a close one.
I'm wondering, are we allowed to even, you know, because they did let another steroid user sing the seventh inning stretch tonight, but Sosa's not.
I have an update, actually. I have an update. Interesting. I have an update. Yeah. Not anything that's important, but again, I was at the game, and they showed Sammy on the scoreboard. So I don't know if that's new or whatever, but.
No, they've done that before.
Oh, really?
One of those little, like.
It was the main scoreboard, though.
Between inning videos. Yeah, they've done that.
Okay.
That's not new then. I know he was part of the ESPN crew, but it's just amusing is a word to describe it, that Alex Rodriguez is chill to sing the stretch, but Sosa's not even welcome, like, in the ballpark. He can't even sit there, like, you know, like when they had Soriano there in the playoffs last year, and I think in 2016, he doesn't even do anything. They just show him in the stands, and he said it's because his son roots for the Cubs, and he wants to go to the game.
Yeah.
Sosa's not allowed in there, though, but A-Rod, here's a microphone. Go ahead.
You know, it will happen. It will happen eventually. Yeah. I'm serious. It will happen eventually.
I know. It's playful ribbing. I don't even really care. It's not like I'm, like, a big – I wasn't even necessarily the biggest, like, Sammy Sosa mark. I just think it's a strange hill to die on.
I agree.
Given some of the other people that have sang the stretch. But
especially when you employ Manny Ramirez, you know, to mentor people like Javi Baez.
And literally you have half your team right now literally swinging like him. But, yeah, so let's preview this Pirates series because, Brendan, I fear if we run too long, the game will have already started.
I know, and I'm going to fall asleep
over
here. We
got to get to bed, brother. Speaking of the Cubs, everybody else has to get up for this game.
I got to edit this podcast, too. Okay, so here we go. So tomorrow or today, you're listening to this today, so the game probably starts in a few hours for you. The start time is 12:35 p.m. Central. We have the aforementioned Mike Montgomery on the hill. 0-1, 5.33 ERA. He'll be facing Chad Kuhl for Pittsburgh. Kuhl has a 4.20 ERA, 8.57 K per 9, 3.07 walk per 9. And then on Tuesday, John Lester takes the mound. He's 4-2, best ERA in the squad, 2.37 ERA. He'll face Ivan Nova, 2-5, 4.96 ERA. Pretty bad year for Nova. after a relatively successful year for Pittsburgh last year. And then on Wednesday, Kyle Hendricks will take the mound. That game starts at 6.05 p.m. Central. I think I forgot the start time for the Tuesday game. Tuesday is also 6.05 p.m. But on that Wednesday game, Hendricks will face Joe Musgrove. You might recall that Joe Musgrove was part of that deal that sent Colin Moran and Musgrove to Pittsburgh for Gerrit Cole. Musgrove, 1-0, zero ERA, hasn't pitched much this year. He's been kind of plagued by injuries over the last few years, but has just great stuff. We're talking a mid to upper 90s fastball, slider, cutter, changeup. He looks good. He might be a problem for the Cubs, who really struggle against guys they haven't seen that much. And this is going to begin a long road trip. So they'll go to Pittsburgh, and then they'll finish that up on a Wednesday, take the night flight out probably, or maybe the morning flight out, to New York to face the Mets, and then we'll preview that as well. So this is going to be I wouldn't say this is like a really dire series or whatever, but with Milwaukee playing so well, it'd be nice to get on a roll here. And Pittsburgh is a division rival. They're 28-24. They're exceeding their expectations, but playing well against Pittsburgh. You go to New York, who's struggling. They don't look good. They have their own injuries. I'm just saying it'd be nice to have a nice like win out of 6 out of 7 games and just kind of cut down the lead here, Corey.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, the Pirates, you know, managing to stick around here, and as we you know head toward June, you know, they could certainly drop off. I don't think anybody's counting on them to stick around the whole year, but get to a certain point in the year where if you're competing, you're competing, right? I mean, you know, you can't. There's not always that much time left in the year for a team to revert back to whatever you thought of them as. But yeah, you know, we mentioned this in the last podcast where you just don't want to let the Brewers get too far ahead. We know what happened last year, but the Brewers are a better team now, and they're also, you know, well aware that that happened to them. So wherever they are now, I would expect them to, you know, maneuver at the deadline as well and do whatever they can, whatever, you know, if they still have a lead by that point or whatever, they're aware that they blew a, you know, 6-game lead or whatever it was to the Cubs last year. I'm sure they're not intent on doing it again. So, you know, we saw them go out and get Yelich, they added Kane. So, you know, we saw Milwaukee blow a 6-game lead or whatever it was to the Cubs last year. And I'm sure they're not intent on doing it again. So you don't want to pace them too much to a lead here. And I don't think that Milwaukee is this good, but you rack up the wins however you rack up the wins. So they will play, I think they're welcoming St. Louis in, so you hope, you know, maybe they can beat up on each other and Cubs can take care of Pittsburgh. But yeah, I mean, you're just looking for, again, more consistency, and we got to stop with some of these like sloppy routine mistakes.
Yeah, it's going to kill me.
I think by this point, by May 27th here, we're really hoping that that would stop. But again, this first inning tonight, just a real mess all around and just like straight up not good enough for this team. And, you know, just for the standard that they've set and for the standard of a really good team in this league, and you know, when you want to win the division, and again, you look at a team like the Brewers, 34-20, like, you don't really have time to be making errors on a daily basis, and you got to clean that stuff up, you know, like, you can't be doing it, so it'll be interesting. Tomorrow, you know, you hope they just get through it. It's a tough situation, and again, every team goes through this stuff, and you don't want to complain about it or make it too big of a deal, but the reality is these guys are human beings, and this is tough. They're getting on a plane at, like, midnight in Chicago. They should be in the air by now. And you've got a game at, you know, 1:30 Eastern time where they're traveling to the next day. So that is tough. You've got a fill-in spot starter. Let's see if they can steal one tomorrow and, you know, play a good game against Cool, who they've, you know, seen a good bit over the years. And then we'll take it from there. But I guess I'm going to try, Brendan, I'm going to try to take it easy on them tomorrow if it you know, isn't the best result, but hopefully it is.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see what happens when the game's like 5-0 in the second inning. You start messaging me all those expletives.
No.
But let me, I want to get my weather forecast in here. It's the one thing I look forward to the most during this podcast. So Pittsburgh, we have a 20% chance of rain on Monday, which is today. High of 91. By the way, the weather in the Midwest and East Coast, terrible. I was in Chicago today, actually. It was like 98 on my car dashboard. Insane. And then on Tuesday in Pittsburgh, it'll be 93. Another 20% chance of rain. Wednesday, it looks pretty bad, guys. 80% chance of rain. High of 82. It's going to be a muggy day. Don't go to the game, probably. So that's your forecast. They'll get the first two games in Wednesday. Hopefully they can get it in, but it does not look good at the moment, Corey.
All right. Well, Brendan, again, just trying to keep pace with Ian Happ as far as their budding meteorology careers.
I think I do a better job. I'm not going to lie. I'm a natural.
Has more charisma.
I don't know about that. I think I'm pretty charismatic.
I think that was kind of a joke because Happ doesn't really show much personality. But
I think, to be honest with you, I think he has shown more personality this year. I'm being serious about that one.
Yeah, he's budding. He's letting it show a little bit more. I mean, he did go on the Weather Channel. I mean, I wouldn't have done that.
I would do that in a heartbeat. Just call me up, everyone. If you're listening to this, let's go. Let's fly me out.
You're more of a showman than I, Brendan. But we will talk to you guys after these three in Pittsburgh. Hopefully, the Cubs can build on this series W against the Giants and keep things rolling on the road here against the Pirates and the New York Mets. As always, this has been the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. You can find us on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes. Blog Talk Radio has the full feed as well. If we are not on whatever medium you prefer to listen to your podcasts, let us know. You can tweet me at CF Cubs Related or Brendan at Cubs Related. Both of those, of course, on Twitter. And if we are not on whatever your preferred medium is, we will do what we can to rectify that and make it easier for you to listen to us. But other than that, we will talk to you after this Pittsburgh series. Go Cubs.